The 49ers, who, again, we just referenced it, St. Louis beat a week ago. The Niners are 8-3-1. They're hosting the 5-7 Dolphins at Candlestick Park in a game that will be called by Greg Gumbel and Dan Dierdorf on the CBS television network. San Francisco is laying 10 in this one, and it's been a fairly solid line through the week here. Not really much movement in this game. This is one where, again, a lot of times in a spot like this, a team like Miami that's got a pretty good defense, really good against the run, spotty against the pass. I would like them to stay inside of it under general circumstances. I kind of came into the game with a certain disposition that way. And this is not the only time this happened this week, but really when I started kind of looking at it a little bit more, this does look like a good snapback situation for San Francisco off of that loss last week. The danger is they have the Sunday night game against New England next week. Could be a potential sandwich game here for San Francisco coming off of that bitter loss to St. Louis last week. By the way, side note, the statisticians were probably getting ready to run amok. We have like one tie in the NFL every couple of years. If it was two teams in the same division tying each other the same year, I would love to see the lottery-esque odds on that happening.
Yeah, I for a second I thought the 49ers and Rams were going to tie last week myself. Here's the thing. Look for a low-scoring game here.
Mm-hmm.
The 49ers have not lost back-to-back games, by the way, under Harbaugh. They're going to win here. The question is going to be the back door, which is what has me staying away from this game. This is a big game for Kaepernick to see. I mean, they might try some things. I just don't think Miami's got the horses to keep up here.
But they
did backdoor New England last week.
Yeah, but again, they
backdoored New England last week.
Tannehill's been up and down. Tannehill scares me, and ultimately Tannehill on the road is why I'm going with San Francisco in the 10.
I don't lay 10 points. I'm staying away from this one. But
okay. But
the back door will be open. So that's San Francisco with caution. Miami's not going to score much. This might be one to go look at the under.
Yeah.
This one might be look at the under. I mean, off their two previous losses, you can throw the tie in here as well.
Right.
Off the two losses and the tie so far this year,
mm-hmm. This
is how many points the 49ers have given up. 0-6-7.
Wow.
So do not expect Ryan Tannehill to have a career day here.
And that's the thing, too. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that anyways. So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I'm going San Francisco weighing the 10.
I was going to say, Miami's in an inexplicable 7-3 against the number its last 10 road games.
I don't get that. Yeah.
And they're kind of a bad home team spread-wise, too. They're kind of weird like that.
Yeah,
so.
that sounds like another thing in terms of the law of averages that's due to start breaking the other way.
Under Harbaugh, let's go back to last year. Awful loss. They've allowed an average of 7.6 points per game.
Hard to see Miami going too far over that, which is another reason that I like the Niners to cover the 10 points. We've been talking a lot of NFC in the last NFC West, I should say, in the last couple games here. We'll wrap up the NFC West with a game that has two teams playing one another. For folks who want to talk about Week 1 NFL games being destiny here, Arizona defeating Seattle in a game that I think surprised most of us the first week of the season.
Seattle had a lot of hype coming into the year.
They did, and I picked them to win the division. I was buying into the hype a little excessively, although not nearly as excessively as it looked earlier in the season. But again, two teams that have so gone the other way since then. Arizona 4-8, with the eight losses all being in a row here. Seattle now 7-5. They're going to be hosting this one at CenturyLink Field. Chris Myers, Tim Ryan, Jamie Maggio on the call on the Fox Television Network. A 10-point line had been 10.5. There's so much not to like with the Cardinals and the way that they're going. Having said that, as good of a defense as Seattle has, their run defense, kind of middle of the pack here, 110.6 yards per game given up. Arizona's clearly going to be coming into this thing. Well, again, they're going to be facing a lot of eight in the box, but they're going to be in there trying to pound it with Beanie Wells. And I talked about Minnesota in a similar spot last week. Not that their offense is nearly as bad right now as Arizona's, but kind of the same precept. If you can just kind of keep it close with your running game, I look for Arizona to do that. And this is one where, again, of the teams that I'm picking that are dogs with good size spreads this week. This is one of the clear ones. This is the clearest case of where I think it's a backdoor situation. I think Seattle's going to have this one in hand, but Arizona probably just sneaks inside of the 10 at the very end here and screws everybody that went against them. So my sense is Arizona to cover for a second time against Seattle, just not to win this time.
When you said there's not a lot to like about Arizona, you weren't kidding. Not only is it 8 straight losses, you know what's really discouraging?
What?
In 2 of their last 3 losses, they've gotten a total of 10 turnovers from the other team. They had
right.
4 against the Jets. They forced 4 turnovers against the Jets, still lost. 3 weeks ago, when I took them in both these games.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks ago, they got 6 turnovers from Atlanta and still found a way to lose.
Sure.
Seattle's kind of in a letdown here off the rare road win over Chicago, which, by the way, is their last true road game.
Yeah.
The only time they're leaving Seattle the rest of the year is when they go to north of the border to play Buffalo and Toronto.
Yeah.
Other than that game, they have 3 division home games. Seattle's getting to the playoffs.
Right.
And they'll probably get backdoored here, but I want to bring up something.
Right.
Let's give Pete Carroll some credit.
Mm-hmm.
We all make fun of him, coach him up, Pete, for smacking asses and, you know, doing his rah-rah shtick. But is it a case that he's one-upped Harbaugh this year? Carroll went with the kind of wacky move of Russell Wilson, unconventional against selecting him to be the starter instead of Matt Flynn, who they gave all the money to. It was the right – I mean, at this point, is there any doubt that that was the right move?
No, I thought it was stupid at the time, but I can't second-guess it.
No, Russell Wilson's been great. Any other year, he's rookie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a rookie class. Meanwhile, Harbaugh's kind of, you know, in the middle of a second straight strong year, has made a kind of a unconventional switch at quarterback. Jury's still out there.
Very much so.
You know, I mean, Harbaugh tried to pull Coach him up Pete and – who knows? I mean, everyone regards Harbaugh more favorably than Coach him up Pete, but
right.
Yeah, I just wanted to point that out, that
right.
You know, has Coach him up Pete maybe dance a little circle around Jim Harbaugh?
Well, if Carroll wants to stay eligible for Coach of the Year, he's going to have to escape the pitfall next week, not beating the Buffalo Bills, but getting across the border with weed smuggled in his ass like we know he'll probably try to do.
Oh, now come on. I'll tell you, Seattle – look, it's funny that we all didn't like the NFC West.
Yeah.
You picked them to win the division. I didn't, but they're going to make the playoffs.
They are.
Seattle's going to be – I mean, they're not going to lose more than a game. I think they could beat San Francisco certainly at home with
right.
that home field advantage.
But do you agree with me on Arizona to cover this one?
I mean, it's not a recommended play, but I can
okay.
see the back door. I mean, it's a kind of a natural letdown for Seattle, even though they've got revenge.
Okay.
Seattle's one of those teams that I just don't want to lay – 10 points with really against anybody.
The next one is one that I find inexplicable to me as far as when it's being played, because to my knowledge, the flex season has started for NBC, and you wouldn't know it by looking at the game this week here. The 4-8 Lions at the 8-4 Pack at Lambeau Field on Sunday night here. Michaels, Collinsworth, Tafoya on the call. Hard to believe they're not flexing out of this one here, unless they wanted to and the NFL said, hey, flex these nuts, you're keeping that game. But really, it comes to a protected thing of teams can only be on so many times. So I'm guessing a team like the Giants you're not going to see on Sunday Night Football again. But doesn't this smack of a strange situation when the Lions are completely out of it?
Quite frankly, Rick Morris, it doesn't matter what two teams are playing Sunday night because there's only one draw. And that, to me, is what is Bob Costas going to say at halftime? Well, what issue
something
will he go,
else inappropriate.
What issue will he go off on this week? That's what I want to see.
What else will he needlessly politicize?
Will he maybe talk about health care this week? The right to choose. That's what I want to see. Bob Costas, the moral conscience of America, that is the true draw on Sunday night. My pick on Sunday night is Bob Costas plus 14.
I am seriously about to retch after that. Bob Costas, yeah, well, we'll see if he's got the stones to, say, denounce Papa John's for their Obamacare layoffs there. Let's see if Bob Costas
has
the stones
to hear that.
After a sponsor.
I'd like to see it. You know, I just hope they hurry the first half up so we can get to Costas, because that's what I'm going to tune in to see. I may actually skip the first half and just tune on at halftime and tune it off.
Yeah, well.
Certainly not tuning out for the hard-hitting debate of Rodney Harrison and Tony Dungy.
Oh.
Talk about a guy whose politics I don't want to hear, Tony Dungy. His far-right fascist politics.
More of Tony Dungy, a moral man.
Oh, yeah, moral man.
More of him, less of Bob Costas.
No, Bob Costas is a guy that, in my opinion, has once again raised the bar and set the standard in journalism. Bob Costas, my hat's off to you. You might be small in stature, but your words stand tall.
Hey, Bob, I'm sure Orenthal, your old broadcast colleague, agrees with you that guns aren't necessary for a crime of passion.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. They can do more, okay? Let me tell you. Look, there could be an emergency mini-episode scheduled right here if this train goes off the tracks, because I'll tell you what. That O.J. defense. First of all, O.J. never been convicted.
All the more reason to friend the FDH Lounge on Facebook, because then you'll find interesting little debates like this, like we had going on.
You ought to be ashamed here. That whole OJ. You know, I love gun guy, by the way. I am gun guy.
Yeah, but I don't own any, but I am gun guy. I just don't own any because I'm too lazy to go buy them, but I am gun guy. And I have friends that are gun nuts. I have friends that have arsenals.
Let me tell you something.
I believe in their rights.
These people who came out of the woodwork to criticize, I mean, this is the 1930s, antiquated thinking, I love Lucy, going to church on
There's
Sunday
10
morning
million
crowd.
More guns a year on the streets. How would we round, even in your totalitarian dreams, how would we do this?
And Bob Costas did not say he is going to knock on responsible law-abiding citizens' doors and take their guns. Now, I might do that, but Bob Costas is not going to do that. And neither is the great Barack Hussein Obama, okay, while we're talking about great people.
You know what? CM Punk's got nothing on me as I'm about to shoot here. Kyle Ross, from knowing you and your lifestyle, you are a selective nanny state enthusiast, shall we say.
Oh, are you?
You're a very selective, narrow nanny state enthusiast, as I shoot.
Here's the thing. No one said anything about law. Again, I want you, gun guy, to name one instance of a law-abiding citizen who has had their gun ripped away from them.
Well, the guns are being sold the last 4 years very strongly because gun owners know that Obama would take them away if he could.
No, he wouldn't.
Sure.
No, what basis do you have for that comment?
Well, you're the guy that always says to me that Obama doesn't push hard enough for the things that you want. He just doesn't have the stones to push harder. He's a gun control enthusiast in his heart of hearts.
Yeah, gun control.
Yeah,
gun control.
Gun control means take them away.
No, it doesn't. It means having reasonable laws. This is not the Wild West.
Folks are arming themselves. Hey,
don't get me started on these doomsday people.
Well, look,
because that's going to happen, just like Y2K happened, and just like these freaking yokels who think the end of the world is coming in 2 weeks because some stupid Mayan calendar said so a billion years ago. Those people had it right. That's why they hit the bricks 5 million years ago. Give me a break. No one, I don't believe, all things considered, I don't believe in taking responsible, honestly, because I know what you were wink, wink, nudge, nudging at
yes,
there.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Just like that,
it's
the 5% who ruins it for the other 95%. Okay? And you know I'm true. You know I'm right.
Well, and as far as the federal government.
I
think my boy G. Gordon Liddy had some thoughts about the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms folks there and some of the excesses of that. Does the name Ruby Ridge ring a bell to anybody out there?
I don't like the ATF. You know me.
I
don't like them.
And right do converge on
I've told
here.
You. I don't like the ATF. I don't care for them.
Suffice it to say you'd like them if it was just the F.
Get the F out, okay? Yeah. Okay. But no,
I don't know what the crossover is to our wrestling fan enthusiast. I know a certain one down by Louisville, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Beyond that, I don't know how many other folks are going to get that reference.
Look,
but that's
the bottom line is this. Give me Costas. No one is going to take away the guns. It's so fun. Like, here's the thing. And this is a little bonus coverage here for you in this mini episode. We're getting a little political, which we've tried to always stay away from.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I hate special interest groups. There's nothing special or interesting about any of them. I don't care if you're left or right.
I'm glad to hear you denounce unions and women's groups, Kyle. Thank you.
Well, here's the problem. They serve their purpose very nice. But here's the thing. Because they're so, like, just not level-headed. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, here's the thing. Why do people, and by people, I mean you, people of your ilk, mm-hmm. hate the ACLU? Don't give some smarmy answer. I'm going to tell you the answer. Because they blindly, it doesn't matter what the person did.
Yeah,
they blindly, well, it doesn't matter what you did. They believe in representation forever, which, I mean, again, I mean, everyone does need, you just can't, you can't convince, I mean, even people like Jerry Sandusky need lawyers. It's just the way it works.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
just to pick up.
He had a lawyer.
Okay. But here's the thing. Why do people not like them? Because it's like, even in the most severe instances, they will advocate support for
it's
someone.
Knee-jerk.
Okay.
They're like, hey, Nazis should be allowed to march through black or Jewish neighborhoods. Again, they're extremists.
Okay. Well, the NRA is the same way. You know, look, should we
was there any kind of act?
These people were calling for Costas's head. Here's the thing.
Individual
NRA,
folks on Twitter. I didn't see any big organized movement here. Fire
well,
Bob
that's
Costas.
That's because the NRA types can't figure out how to turn on the damn computer yet, okay?
I think most people like me, most people who agree with my point of view are probably just like me, like, wow, I'm annoyed that he just went on this. And again, typical liberal kind of appeal
oh,
to
here
emotion.
We go.
Well, it was an appeal to emotion, not reason. It was not an appeal to reason. It was like, guns are bad, okay, Mr. Mackey. But like, what are you going to do about 10 million guns per year going onto the streets? If you believed in totalitarian America, you still couldn't pull it off all the way.
He didn't say that. He just said, called for sensible gun policy.
And we may need a red dawn someday at what's coming out of the Beltway. So let me throw it on that
marker. Stop. That is not going to happen. Okay, we are not going to. All right, here's the. All right. We're all over the map here. Let's refocus.
Yeah, we are.
Let's refocus. Is that a good. Okay. All right. Here's the NRA. Look. I believe, look, there's a Second Amendment in this country, and it does need to be upheld.
It does.
But that does the Second Amendment...
I'll stop you right there.
Okay,
but
well, I'm going to keep going. The Second Amendment does not mean that Joe Schmo should be able to go to Walmart, say, AK-40 dick, please, and then just be handed it and walk out.
There's limits on everything. You can't
exactly.
buy machine guns.
But the NRA thinks you should. According to the NRA's policy is, you know what, if Joe Schmo wants to walk into Walmart, and say they, you know, they're just like the ACLU in that instance. They have fought tooth and nail against every regulation. That's why they have no credibility on the issue.
I think unlike the ACLU, they have some legitimate worries about a slippery slope. I think that's where I would disagree.
Well, there's slippery slopes. Look, I don't agree with everything the ACLU does, but there's slippery slopes. I mean, if you say, oh, you know, this guy, Jerry Sandusky, can't have representation, you know, who's to say it doesn't slip, you know?
I think Jerry Sandusky
they
should have representation on par with Lionel Hutz, which is what it looks
okay.
like he had.
Well,
so this doesn't work.
Here's the thing. Those are fringe groups, and I just think that all Bob Costas did, like the gun people over, oh, my God, he's going to take away. He wasn't saying that. He wasn't saying that.
Well, he was ambiguous what he was saying.
And I love when people
and
like,
if you're ambiguous,
well,
then,
he had,
then you're
– I mean, he did have, and I'm not making excuses, he had 90 seconds.
And he has said that subsequently, and I'll cut him a little bit of a break on that, particularly because he said, I tried to get into something that doesn't allow for the amount of nuance in there. That's my whole thing. It's a much more nuanced thing than what he said Sunday night. Guns are bad, okay, she would be alive, blah, 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 blah. You don't know that. And the man was in a homicidal rage. My preferential scenario here would be if he was coming after her in a murderous rage, she picks up a gun, shoots him. His brain still gets splattered, but she's a hero that saved her own life.
How many times does that happen, though?
She's the one that needed the gun.
How many times?
Think about it.
Here's the thing. Like,
too bad
how many
she didn't
times,
have a concealed carry
how many
permit.
Times does that really happen? Like the old, like harkening back to the Wild West where this guy, where an individual was accosted and they could say, I had my gun and I saved myself. More often than not, it goes the wrong way, George Zimmerman style. It goes the wrong way.
We still don't know what happened.
I know, but
case.
Still, I'm just saying that it happens in it goes bad.
Sure,
it's people are too. Here's what? The thing. My experience is this. Now I have lived a fairly blessed life, but I've been in some bad places at times. In my 32 years on this planet, I have never remotely said, hey, "I wish I had a gun." Like, where, like these people who tell me, oh, I hope you don't come across some psycho someday. Where are you people walking? Where are you hanging out? Like, I have never, like, I have been some, like, I, like, where are you people? Look, I understand that there are valid concerns. I'm going to shock you here.
Yeah.
If you're grown, if you're born into, you know, maybe a bad neighborhood, you know, I don't want to stereotype here, but, you know, just any neighborhood in America, high crime rate. Look, there is a valid concern if it makes you feel better to maybe keep some sort of firearm in the home. But, like, this idea that, you know, John Wayne, you know, like, the dad is going to be John Wayne and shoot off the evil intruders. When does that happen?
Well, and I got something.
And with athletes, look, here's the thing, too. Here's where Costas was absolutely right because to bring it in with athletes.
What?
How many times have athletes ruined careers because of guns? Plaxico Burress, to name one.
Before I get to the joke where we can cap this with, I'm going to agree partially on this. His phrase about the gun culture, when he got to elaborate on that a little bit, and I heard him on the Dan Patrick Show the next day. The thing is, again, for somebody like myself, a big Second Amendment guy, a big believer in it, somebody who, during my days as a political intern in Washington, D.C., once had the privilege of going on a gun shoot with the leadership of the Gun Owners of America folks. We went out to a place in West Virginia and shot firearms all day, and I didn't get to touch the machine gun, unfortunately, but that was, you know, they're responsible people. They're responsible gun owners. But I love guns, but it's a thing of where you do have to respect them. People who do, it is a privilege as well as a right to have a gun in this country. It's a thing of where it is the people who do not fully respect the firearms. I am a huge Second Amendment guy, but it's a thing like you have to take it seriously. You have to respect it for what it is. My friends who have, you know, my one friend who I refer to who has an arsenal, dude, I guarantee you respects the mother loving hell out of everything that's in there. He only gets it out under certain circumstances. He takes it to the range, whatever. That's how you got to look at it, not spinning the damn thing on your finger to impress your boys and your crew. That's the whole thing of where we start to get into this. By the way, I'll cap this part of it with a riddle for the listeners here. The worst place that Kyle Ross was ever in his life, he was in no danger of getting shot.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
I think that there was this horrible leap of faith to get, like, again, you talk about respecting firearms. I totally agree. That's why, look, I'm not against gun ownership. I just think it should be kind of hard.
Well,
there's nothing wrong. Like, if you're going to use a gun responsibly, because look, the NRA was against the Brady Bill. You know they were. They were against everything. They're against waiting. They, if it was up to them, that you would just be able to go in a store, buy a gun, and you'd be shooting it by 1 o'clock.
But here's the thing, though. Whatever guys like you or anybody want to stereotype as your typical NRA card member, whatever image you have in mind of, you know, fat, jolly, white Southerner.
I'm dating a member of the NRA.
Good for you. I'm very appreciative of hearing that. I was not aware of that about her. But the thing of it is that whatever your image is of that person, I guarantee you they're the kind of person that does what I say they should do, treat it with respect. Those are the people that are like, damn it, I only get the thing out when I want to use it, take it to the range. Those are the people.
I'm not necessarily stereotyping.
That's what I'm saying. The people who give gun owners a bad name are not the ones who are passionate about gun rights. It's the folks who aren't passionate about gun rights that give them a bad name. It's the people who have it recreationally. Look at my gun. Let me show my gun to my crew, yo.
Now you're stereotyping.
Well,
now you're stereotyping. Don't read anything into that. I'm reading, buddy. I'm turning the pages, okay?
That could be like an M&M kind of a thing. Okay. Don't read anything into that.
Here's the thing. But they need to understand that. But at the same time, the people who don't respect it are the same people I debated all week long on Facebook and in person.
Yeah.
That say, oh, I hope you know. They're the people who are like, I hope you don't come across some psycho. Look, first of all, I always say thank you to anyone who wishes me, wishes me personal safety. Thank you. But who do you think I'm going to come across? Like, these crazy.
This is a pretty lily white suburb. You're probably okay here.
But even, like, when I walk downtown, okay, yes. Do you sometimes when it's dark at night, maybe you move a little fast? Look, I walked through a fairly tabled, you know the neighborhood, actually.
Yeah.
When me and Chad Repek went to the old ECW Arena one time, we walked back to our
I never had the privilege of going there.
Oh, you didn't?
I know fully about the arena.
Okay,
the
area is it's a bad area.
It's an armpit.
And
yeah.
I was kind of nervous walking through it.
Yeah.
But even then, I mean, you know, Reeps is a tough guy. He's in the Army. He can handle himself. I didn't, like, think, oh, God, I wish I would have bought a fire, made sure to bring up. Like, I just don't – I don't see a need for it. Again, if you're a responsible gun owners are the ones who overreact, they are passionate about it. I'll respect the passion, but it's misguided.
Again, I didn't see anybody calling for Bob Costas to be fired. I mean, yeah, you might have some knee-jerk stuff on Twitter, but I didn't see...
Your boy Sean Hannity didn't dedicate 72 minutes to it.
Hannity's just a sensationalist.
I Googled Bob Costas the next day,
okay.
And there was all this idiot moron should be fired. Now, granted, it wasn't from the most always legitimate. Now, one of them was like theright.com, but I don't know how interesting that they're wrong and everything. But anyway, here's the thing. And because people also want to say, I want to make one more point about Costas.
Okay.
Because everyone wants to claim liberal media, liberal this, liberal that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, the shoe fits in this instance.
No, it's called intelligence. Because people are like, oh, well, Hank Williams, you know, that anti-Semite.
He was giving a simplistic mouth-breathing kind of a thing to a complicated societal issue. He
Here's
was appealing to emotion and not reason, Kyle
yes.
Ross.
Okay, but who cares? Now, he's allowed to say that. I wasn't. You know me well. I don't get offended.
He's allowed. I rolled my eyes. I'm allowed to roll my eyes.
Oh, here's the thing, though, because can I talk to your boy Smalley during the week?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah, that it's so much. What Costa was nothing close.
Smalley's a gun grabber. You can't listen to him.
Well,
I hope he's listening.
Okay. Well, here's the thing.
Fellow member of the 21st Century Media Alliance, yes. DLU Productions.
Who else? There was. Oh, and Imus was the other one he referenced. Look,
yeah.
Nothing. Certainly, what Costa said, and even what. Hank Williams Jr. and what Imus said did not offend me personally. My personal narrative would not allow me to, the things they said couldn't possibly offend me because it's not in my personal narrative. But here's the thing. Every one of those people was allowed, there's a First Amendment, not only a Second Amendment, there's a First Amendment in this country,
yeah.
Is allowed to say what they said.
Right.
Okay? Here's the difference. Why was Costas not fired? Because unlike those other two, Bob Costas... And I thought this, and I've listened to him do subsequent interviews that confirmed it, was smart enough to go to the network beforehand and say, hey, guys, I'm going to say this.
He shouldn't have been fired.
No,
I mean, that's,
but
here's there shouldn't be boycotts or anything like that.
No, and here's the thing. But, why wasn't he fired? Because it's the company, Hank Williams Jr., didn't have the good, I mean, first of all, he's not as valuable. I mean, I don't care. Are you ready for some football? That was a played-out song anyway. But that song is not as valuable to the Monday Night Football brand. And you can say what you will about Costas. He's smarmy. He doesn't, he adds minimal stuff. I don't think that halftime thing he does, especially Hines Ward, what is he doing? How's he drawing a paycheck? I'd like to have that gig.
Yeah.
But
he's
more,
more
valuable to the Sunday Night brand than Hank. I mean, there's just a lot of factors at play. You're right. He should be fired.
No. I mean,
I didn't actually think Imus should have been fired.
No, I didn't think so either. That's a thing, though. Too,
because it's also part of his shtick.
Well, but it's the left that does speech codes. Don't call gay people that. It's the left that does speech codes, not the right, Kyle Ross. So that's why.
Well, I don't think he should. I mean, he's kind of a shock jock. Anyway, what do you expect? I mean, he should have been suspended or something.
Yeah, but I mean that's the sensitivity. I was listening to an
ONA
riff the other day. You can't play apparently in Canada anymore. You can't play Money for Nothing by Dire Straits because they don't like some of the lyrics in it. You know, that's where society's going.
Well, I mean, it is
speech codes are on the left.
Well,
man.
I mean, it is a poor choice of words.
But it was a satirical type of thing, as ONA pointed out. It was a satirical thing.
Talking about slippery slopes, buddy.
They were making fun of homophobes in that song.
Oh, they were.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
I like Mark Knopfler. I like that song, but I have no problem. I have no problem with that part, and I know everyone who knows.
But
that song.
So it should just be excised from any viewings. So like wipe it out of our cultural history when that video plays on VH1 Classic, which, as I understand, they've done. That entire part of the video no longer plays. So again, it's the left wing that does speech codes, really not the right wing.
It's called progression in society. Okay. There was a time when only you and me.
More nanny state stuff.
No,
okay.
There,
right.
No, it's called inclusion. No one,
We're making a joke about some dude in boat shoes. The government should throw me in jail. Okay.
No one said that again. You're making a huge leap of faith.
Well, again, as I say, speech codes come from that side of the political aisle, not the right side.
It's just called being mindful of people.
Being mindful. It's a pity that so many conversations with you were off air over a period of time, because I would love to compare and contrast certain comments versus what we're saying right now.
Always mindful. What have I not been mindful?
You are shameless enough to say that, and I am defenseless enough without the proof to put these things on the air.
Don't think I've ever slandered anyone.
Well, that's one where we clearly have to agree to disagree, since I don't have the proof on that right now. Merely what my ears have told me in many humorous off-air conversations.
You must have heard wrong.
I'm sure that's what it was. Well, now that we've talked more about the more interesting part of the NBC broadcast than the actual game, which I believe I started by saying I don't even know why they're at Lambeau Sunday night, I'll simply say in this one here, Green Bay is laying 6.5. It started at 7. I think they're on a roll at this point. I've got them rated higher in my power rankings than you do at this point. I got them fourth.
That
in the
offensive
NFC.
Line has concern. What an interesting scenario. They have arguably the best quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, he's no worse than two. It's him or
right.
Brady. Operating behind the second worst offensive line in the league.
Yeah.
Besides Philadelphia.
And that's going to be problematic. But, again, on Sunday they did what they started to do, what they should have been doing arguably earlier in the season, trying to establish a run game. I think they're going to stay committed to that. I think it's going to help them on Sunday night. Interestingly enough, I think the Lions are going to do the same thing. I think they're going to do what I said last week I thought Minnesota would do with Peterson and did successfully establish the run. I think the Lions are going to try and do that with Michael LeShore. Michael LeShore is a decent running back, but obviously no Adrian Peterson. That's why I think they'll come up even shorter than Minnesota did. So I'll take Green Bay laying the 6.5.
I just want to hear Bob Costas.
Do you have any sense one way or another, or are you laying off of this one?
Here's the problem. Detroit always loses, but they usually lose close. And they're getting enough points here.
Mm-hmm.
But you got a question. By the way, have I been at least proven it? Here's one thing maybe we can agree on.
Okay.
Jim Schwartz is a terrible coach.
They were a playoff team last year. He's not a terrible coach.
He stinks.
We expected a little bit of regression from them there this year.
Yeah, because he stinks. Because I knew that. What did they start last year? 4-0, 5-0? How bad have they been since then?
I'm going to channel Shawn Michaels circa 97. You're going to put this all in Jim Schwartz's lap?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, he's horrible.
Really?
He's a bottom five coach in this league.
Bottom five? How many bottom five coaches have a nice shiny playoff appearance to their effect?
Norv Turner's been in the playoffs before. How's he?
True. Yeah, I can't defend that.
Who's worse than Jim Schwartz? Norv Turner.
Does Jeff Foxworthy have grounds for suing us for playing this game? Okay, who's worse than Jim Schwartz? All right.
Norv Turner. Ron Rivera.
Norv Turner's worse.
Ron Rivera.
Ron Rivera's worse.
Pat Shurmur's
worse.
I don't know who else is worse than him.
Romeo Crennel's worse. Love you, Romeo, but you're worse.
Okay, so that's five.
Dennis Allen's worse.
Incomplete. Guy's coached.
Incomplete?
He's coached 11 games.
This guy's made the playoffs and Dennis Allen won't.
Dennis Allen's had one. He's not even coached the full year.
Dennis Allen might be one and done, as we were speculating about before.
So like Mike Mularkey, too.
Yeah, Mike Mularkey. He's not – so come on. Schwartz is not bottom five.
They've been given bad
situations.
Jim Schwartz. No, I want – Jim Schwartz has talent.
Jim Schwartz –
What talent does Dennis Allen have?
Still better than Leslie Frazier.
I don't know about that. Minnesota, with only one good player, has gotten to 6 and has beaten Detroit twice. Leslie Frazier's 2-0 against Jim Schwartz this year.
Forget bottom five. At the rate we're going, he's a top 20 coach.
Who?
Jim Schwartz.
No, he's not. I think I firmly established he's probably bottom five.
We're probably close to 12 names he's better than.
I disagreed with you on half of them.
That's irrelevant. Mike Munchak. He's better than Mike Munchak.
I don't think he is.
Mike Munchak's pathetic.
Tennessee beat Detroit this year.
All the guy ever does is go around firing cancer victims and coaching underachieving teams.
Well, I mean,
Jim Schwartz is better.
Well, unfortunately, when it comes to the world of NFL coaching, what you said, while morally deplorable, is not as offensive as a coach single-handedly costing his team the game throwing a red flag on Thanksgiving.
He's better than Chan Gailey.
I don't know if that's true. The guys who you're ripping have no talent. Jim Schwartz has talent.
He's not better than my boy Coach Wiz.
No, he's not.
No. I must draw the line there. He's not better than Coach Wiz.
Oh, you know what? Okay, never mind. Never mind, he's not bottom five. Because I've disagreed with you on everyone except the first four.
Okay.
Jason Garrett's worse than Jim Schwartz.
Jason Garrett.
Jason Garrett is atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are my bottom five, though. Garrett, Turner, Rivera, Shermer, and Crennel are the only five coaches in the league worse than Jim Schwartz.
And again, I'll just about double that list, so that would put him about top 20 in my book. So,
double a bunch of guys with who have coached 10 games with no talent teams are worse than a guy who's had what 3 years now with the
Kyle
same
Ross,
team.
The gap between talent with teams in the NFL is sometimes much less than meets the eye.
He has what three? How many top five picks does this guy have on his roster, Schwartz?
Well, I mean, you know. Technically, Mike Williams and Charles Rogers were top five.
I'm not even counting
Lions
them.
Over time. Well, I'm just saying.
He has Stafford, Calvin Johnson, and your boy Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah.
What an ass he has become, by the way.
He is.
I don't care for him.
He is. He could never be a Houston Texan. That's for darn sure.
Well, I know. They win games.
Matt Schaub. Exactly. Exactly. They're underachieving bunch of guys. So, all right, would you? I'm guessing you wouldn't take a Detroit to cover this one on the road.
No.
Okay.
Bad coaching.
All right, so you're laying off of this one.
Bad coach. I think Bob Costas should coach the Lions.
Okay. last one to get to before I'm a big three. One of the games of the year, Monday nighter, Houston at New England. The 11-1 Texans at the 9-3 Patriots. And, again, this is a 3.5-point line for New England. Had been 4.5 earlier in the week. So the money seems to be going Houston's direction. And yet, I'm going the other way on this one. New England really, really needs this one for playoff seeding. Houston, not so much. Houston's biggest test thus far earlier in the year. Yeah, you could say Chicago was right there and they beat them. But that Green Bay loss in primetime, 42-24. Again, I have more confidence in Belichick being able to get this team up for this game. I don't back off from the notion that these teams will meet for the AFC Championship.
We've said it all year. We have said it all year.
And Houston would win.
We have said
that
all year.
But that has nothing to do with this right here. I think New England, in order to be able to get to that spot in the AFC Championship, needs this one worse. I take the Pats on Monday night, laying the 3.5 at home.
Yeah, Belichick's covered 67% of the time the last 4 weeks of the regular season as the coach of New England.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. And you're right. They need this one more. Houston's kind of come up. They did beat Chicago, but Chicago has been really bad against the big teams. In three primetime games this year, the Texans have lost to Green Bay, like you mentioned, barely escaped the Jets on Monday night. Remember, they were tooth and nail with the Lions in a national TV game on Thanksgiving. They don't need – I mean, look, Houston's – even if they lose this game, they're going to finish no worse than 13 and – well, I mean, if they do lose this game, then they're going to – then they will try next week against Indianapolis.
Right.
But and they may need to try the rest of the way because they wouldn't want to get to three losses. But New England needs this one for that second bye week.
Right.
You know, Houston's clearly going to be one of the top two teams.
Mm-hmm.
New England needs this one. They're going to cut. I believe they win. I believe they win and cover.
Okay.
We've already gone through my big three, right. So it isn't. But no, I'm with you. I think New England comes. I have New England as the best team in the league. These are my top two teams in the league. New England 1, Houston 2. They will meet again in the AFC Championship. I've said it all year, and I'll continue to say it.
Okay. I got Houston 1, Atlanta 2, New England 3. So, yeah, I'm very close in regard.
Here's the thing. New England's losses. 2-1-1.
Yeah.
Their wins, 21, 24, 10, 3 over the Jets, 38, 6, 35, 37. I mean, they win big a lot.
They can be overwhelming, no question about it. Moving on to my big three, the first of them here this week is the 5-7 Saints at the 7-5 Gents. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call here at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. The Giants have tormented me a number of times in the feature
They're a very
spot,
difficult team.
This year. They really are. They did so again last week. In looking at this, Giants are laying 5 down from 6 earlier in the week. I know some people are thinking that this is a bad spot for them with the Atlanta game coming up next, the heartbreaker against Washington just behind them. Short week. I just keep coming back to again, and their defense, as it was during the last regular season, not so great. But the Saints is just even worse. This is a game that, again, should be a shootout. Think it will be. I love the over no matter how inflated it is. But in a game like this one, I think the Giants are just going to have too much firepower for them. So I say take the Giants, lay the five.
Last two times these teams have met, both were in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, one of the few venues. I like to always mention the nickname, the sponsor name, pardon me. Saints crushed them both times.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Saints are going to keep this game close. They're off back-to-back. I know that their season's essentially over now because with the back-to-back 10-point losses to the Niners and the Falcons. But Drew Brees played horribly in both games.
Yeah.
Can he play that bad again a third straight week? The Giants are always that bad home team. I'm going to tell you something here. All year long, we've been talking about that the turnover rate among playoff teams could be its lowest ever this year. Mm-hmm. It's always been between, you know, there's since 1990, when they instituted the curtain 6-team per conference playoff format. It's been slightly modified with the 2002 realignment to 4 divisions instead of 3, but still. There's been never any less than 4 repeat playoff teams, never any more than 8.
Yeah.
This year, we've been saying for a long time that's probably going to be 9. It's going to snap the string.
Yep. It is going to break it.
Were the Giants going to gag and bring it down to 8?
Here's the thing, no.
Because New Orleans and Detroit are not going to make it from the NFC, mm-hmm. so that's 2. Over in the AFC, Indianapolis will supplant either Pittsburgh or Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Both Pittsburgh and Cincinnati will not make it over to Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, unless if the Bears just really continue to fall apart,
mm-hmm.
the only other candidate really is the Giants blowing this NFC East.
Right.
I actually give a small lean to taking the points here.
Okay. Yeah, but here's the thing, and here's why I lean towards the Giants even more, is that, again, and you look back to especially down the stretch last year, this historically, and even this year, when it looked like the Giants were starting to hit the skids, and this is a thing where, and again, nobody knows more than me, as I said, because I've come out the bad end on this a few times. I'm trying to gauge where a team is in the course of a roller coaster season, and the Giants are prone to roller coaster seasons. Witness how they're playing right now. This strikes me as one where they can't lose this game. If they lose this game, the wheels could come off. The Giants are survivors.
Surviving doesn't necessarily mean covering. Two different things.
My sense is if they win, it won't be a squeak by. It'll at least be a touchdown, and they're laying 5. So that's why I like them. I know we're going to differ on the next of my big 3 picks here. 6-6 Cowboys at the 7-5 Bengals. Tom Brenneman, Brian Billick, and the deliciously tanned Laura Oakman on the call on Fox for this one. The Bengals are laying 3, up from 2.5 earlier in the week. My inclination coming into this, because I am a Bengal skeptic, again, would have been to be on the Cowboys here, in a sense that, okay, everybody's too much believing in the Bengals now, time for them to start to go the other way. Bengals, a very streaky team. Start the year with that big loss to Baltimore, win the next 3, lose the next 4, win the next 4. Okay, time for them to go into the tank here.
I agree.
Having said that, this is why I'm on the Bengals, and this is why it's one of my 3 big picks of the week here with them laying the 3 points. For the Cowboys, opposition this year is destiny. It's all about who they're playing. Again, you look at it, and early on, maybe not so much. They did beat the Giants in the opener here, and then Tampa, albeit, was that Tampa before they were Tampa? I don't know. Then again, they lost to Seattle before they were necessarily Seattle. But the games since then, they lost to Baltimore. They lost to the Giants. They lost to Atlanta. They lost to Washington once they started to get it going. They beat Carolina. They beat Philadelphia. They beat Cleveland. And they beat Philadelphia again. I have yet to see them since September, and arguably even including September, if we're going to take that Tampa Bay game out of the mix, beat a decent team. Go into Cincinnati and win this game. What have they done since that Giants game to show they can do this? I say lay the points with Cincinnati in the 3.
I'm going to disagree. I think, as you know, and we talked about last week when they were laying 10 to a miserable Eagles team, we certainly didn't like them, and that's Papa Dallas. This almost made my big 3 going the other way. But the only cause for concern I have is that under Jason Garrett, Dallas is 1-12 against the number off a win.
Okay.
Oh, good God. By the way, that speaks to what a horrible coach he is.
Mm-hmm.
But getting points, the Bengals, I'm not sold. Their last three wins, Kansas City, Oakland, and San Diego, big whoop. I mean, who have they beaten? I mean, I guess they beat the Giants, but so did Dallas. And their other wins were Cleveland, Jacksonville, and Washington before Washington was hot. These teams are very even, which makes me think taking the points is the way to go.
All right, but in the case of the Bengals, though, they're also at home. So
they, yeah, but Dallas is worse at, on the road, or worse at home than they are on the road. Dallas, yeah. Dallas and the Giants are better road teams.
True, true, but that's
by the way, this is Dallas's only road game in a six-game stretch, too.
All right, so we differ on those two. Getting to my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 14, my lock picks slumping to 7-6 after the last couple of weeks here. This last one here, the 8-4 Bears at the 6-6 Vikings. 1 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday at the Mall of America Field in Minneapolis on Fox. As three-time FDH Lounge guest Kenny Albert is on play-by-play along with Daryl Moose Johnson and the dirty shoulder breaker Tony Siragusa roaming the sidelines bellowing incoherently. And sorry, Kenny. At, yeah, in looking at this one, Chicago is laying 3. It had been 1 earlier in the week, so I'm probably chasing the money and going way. It's a dangerous spot in doing that. It makes
road favorite Ricky.
We got to get a sound effect for that. Yeah, yes. Another road favorite Ricky sound effect. My only road favorite of my big three this week, and yet it's my lock pick. I think this is a bounce back game for the Bears.
They need it.
Well, and this might seem very familiar because 2 weeks ago, Minnesota was a bounce back game coming off of the San Francisco loss. They've shown that they measure up well with Minnesota. The trend has been, regression to the mean for Minnesota. You look at the way that Christian Ponder has been playing, since that hot start to the season, what they've been doing, and particularly since Percy Harvin got banged up, it's really been a different story with them. Adrian Peterson is having an MVP kind of a season, but it's not enough against a team like the Bears. You got to be more diversified than they're going to be. You and I have been saying for a long time now that the Vikings are a fraud. They're really going to start going the other way. It's a game that the Bears really need. I see no reason to stay off of this one with Chicago. Chicago covers the 3. Are they going to beat them as badly as they did 2 weeks ago by 18 points? Probably not, because two games back-to-back this closely together, Minnesota's going to be studying the tendencies here. So it may not be an 18-point loss for the Vikings, but it'll be more than 3, so take the Bears.
I obviously just don't like the line, a road favorite, the public's on, I don't like that. But I'm inclined to agree the Bears really need this game, and Christian Ponder is terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, he stinks, and he's stunky, really. I mean, he was never more stinky, I don't believe, than he was against the Bears the first time around. I believe his quarterback rating was a 10.
Yeah.
A 10.3. I'm not sure if that, I'll have to get the crack staff if that's ESPN's QBR or the more traditional one that makes no sense. But
that's only double what Brandon Whedon did in the opener.
Yeah,
10
point. That sounds like an ESPN QBR, but only twice in the last 6 games he's passed from 160 yards.
Yeah.
Bears only win the last 4 weeks. The Bears are trending in the wrong direction, man. I'm coming off them. Remember, before the year I picked them to win the NFC, I'm coming off them.
Okay.
But the Vikings are another team that's, after that good start, they've kind of been sliding. They've only won once over their last 5 games, beating the aforementioned poorly coached Detroit Lions.
And I guess for me it's all a matter of trajectory. The Bears are sloping downwards. The Vikings are plummeting.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between the two.
Yeah. They're not I'm inclined to agree with you, like I said, but I'm just not crazy about a road favorite that's being bet up by the public.
Okay. All right. So your big three for the week are Kansas City, Carolina, and Buffalo.
3 teams I was high on before the year that have not lived up to expectations. Let's get it back, guys.
Let me see if the same is true with me. No, because I wasn't really high on the Bengals coming into the season, but I was high on the Giants and the Bears, picked them both to make the playoffs, and they're 2 of my big three this week, along with, as I say, the Bears to be the 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 14. So it's been an interesting roller coaster ride, Kyle. We'll see what happens here as NFL Week 15 rolls around here next week, and we will reconvene.
as we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, The Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.